Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Oh, yes. Yes, it is yet another very, very, very busy news day today. And we, of course, will be covering primarily, or at least to start with, the Trump indictment. We'll be joined in the 10 o'clock hour by Daniel Miller, the Texas Nationalist Movement. Talk about possibility of secession. We'll take your calls throughout the second hour and up through the third hour. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Friday, the 9th of June, 2023. Donald Trump has been indicted on 7 counts in classified documents probe, or as he calls it, the box hoax. Former President Donald Trump has been indicted on 7 counts in the special counsel's classified documents probe, a stunning development that marks the first time a former president has faced federal charges. Trump is facing a charge under the Espionage Act, his attorney Jim Trusty said on CNN Thursday, as well as charges of obstruction of justice, destruction of classified records, conspiracy and false statements. The special counsel has been investigating Trump's handling of classified documents that were brought to his Mar-a-Lago, Florida resort after he left the White House in 2021, as well as possible obstruction of the investigation and government efforts to retrieve the material. The former president wrote on Truth Social, he's been informed by the Justice Department he will be indicted and summoned to appear at the federal courthouse in Miami on Tuesday at 3 p.m. We, of course, will be covering this very extensively, and we'll be showing you the response, not just from Donald Trump himself, but from a number of different people, including even some good-hearted Democrats who recognize that this is, in fact, an irreversible slip into despotic tyranny, that even hatred of Trump should make you a little bit wary of. Meanwhile, U.S. preparing another $2 billion in arms to Ukraine. Pentagon is set to unveil another $2 billion in military aid for Ukraine, hoping to bolster the country's air defenses as Kiev launches its much-touted counteroffensive against Russian forces, Bloomberg News has reported. Just another $2 billion. $2 billion. Just wild. Just completely insane. And of course, this is all these are all tied up together, and we'll get into some other major news about presidential corruption here that links all of this. But suffice it to say, you can't let law and order get in the way of World War III. Meanwhile, Taliban successfully eradicates poppy cultivation. The Taliban government of Afghanistan has carried out truly unprecedented reductions in poppy cultivation in 2023, according to a new analysis published by ALSIS, a UK-based geographic information services firm specializing in geospatial data collection, statistical analysis, and visualization. How curious, isn't it? A synthetic opioid in fentanyl is invented, and suddenly the CIA and corporate government of the United States not interested in poppy cultivation anymore, leaves Afghanistan, and I guess the righteous warriors of Allah have outlawed it. Pretty incredible. Of course, the fires in Canada still rage out of control. There are now 250 out-of-control fires in Canada. Some saying it's all planned, and have to agree with that. We'll get into some of the new conspiracy theories about this, including that Canada may have been the final destination for that 60,000-pound shipment of ammonium nitrate that went mysteriously missing recently. It's all coming together. We'll discuss that later. Finally, we have this. Republicans will absolutely be impeaching Biden thanks to bombshell FBI evidence. And this is the House Oversight Committee having seen the FBI document that shows no uncertain terms that Joe Biden used his office as vice president to help corrupt the country of Ukraine and enrich himself and his family, leading in no small part to the outbreak of war in that country, because people are evil and we have to stop them. We'll be back, folks, on the other side, show you Donald Trump's response to the indictment. Happening again. They're acting like Donald Trump, some sort of master criminal. Our beautiful and unbiased. You know, it's almost like they're treating the Justice Department as like honorable and like heroic for indicting the current president's primary political opponent, right? It's like they're taking on the burden of having to do this highly unconscionable thing. They are heroically overcoming their own deep-seated reticence in doing something so flagrantly partisan. But they're willing to take those slings and arrows. They're willing to be called the SS. They're willing to be called the law enforcement agency of the Democrats, because it doesn't matter what you say. They're going to stick to the truth. Okay, and if that means indicting Donald Trump, they're just going to take that burden on. It's crazy out there. It's absolutely crazy. All of it is absolutely insane. Wall Street Journal has a story. Trump indicted in classified documents case. Donald Trump was indicted Thursday by a federal grand jury in the investigation into his handling of classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida, marking the first time in history that the federal government has brought charges against a former president. Yes, first time in history. Not over the Iraq war, not over the Afghanistan withdrawal, not over the Clinton murder spree that's still ongoing, nothing having to do with cooperations with Jeffrey Epstein. No indictments for Anthony Fauci or any of the other control freaks that massively increased the damage that COVID would have done had we all just completely ignored it. No, but apparently some assistant of Donald Trump had documents they weren't supposed to have. We'll get into the actual indictment, particulars here in just a second. He was charged with 7 counts, a person familiar with the matter said, including violations of the Espionage Act, which bars the misuse of classified information, as well as obstruction and false statements. A lawyer for Trump, James Trustee, confirmed those counts on CNN. In a post on Truth Social, Trump said his lawyers had been informed of his indictment in connection to what he called the boxes hoax. Trump declared his innocence and said he'd been summoned to appear Tuesday at the federal courthouse in Miami. I don't think there's anything I can say about this that most people haven't already. I mean, there's only a few options here. But all in all, I mean, it's just a, blatantly political action by the Department of Justice. It is completely egregious. Represents a continuation of the trend, but also a major leap in that trend. Kind of like if you see a graph that suddenly like jumps up super high out of nowhere. It was on an upward trajectory already. The idea of tyranny and the weaponization of the DOJ and picking and choosing what crimes to actually prosecute based on the political persuasion of the people involved. We were already on that track, already on that trend. Then you have this like massive jump straight up with this indictment. There's a certain poetry here. It all rhymes. It's amazing. This is Donald Trump's response to the indictment. He posted this on Truth Social. We'll just let the whole thing play. Here is a former president and number one enemy of the current sitting tyrannical regime, Donald Trump.
Against Biden and against the Republicans. Very sadly, we're a nation in decline, and yet they go after a popular president, a president that got more votes than any sitting president in the history of our country, by far, and did much better the second time in the election than the first. And they go after him on a boxes hoax, just like the Russia hoax and all of the others. This has been going on for 7 years. They can't stop, because it's election interference at the highest level. There's never been anything like what's happened. I'm an innocent man. I'm an innocent person. They had the Mueller hoax, the Mueller report, and that came out. No collusion after 2.5 years. That was set up by Hillary Clinton and Democrats. But this is what they do. This is what they do so well. If they would devote their energies to honesty and integrity, would be a lot better for our country. They could do a lot better. They could do a lot of great things. But when you look at what's happened to our country in the last 3 years, we were energy independent. We had a strong military that wasn't woke. We were doing so well. We were respected all over the world. We got the biggest tax cuts in history, biggest regulation cuts in history. And what do? You have a president where an election was taken, got more votes than any sitting president in history by far, never anything even close. And they come after me because now we're leading in the polls again by a lot against Biden and against the Republicans by a lot. But we're leading against Biden by a lot, a tremendous amount. And we went up to a level that they figured the way they're going to stop us is by using what's called warfare. And that's what it is. This is warfare for the law. And we can't let it happen. We can't let it happen. Our country is going to hell. And they come after Donald Trump, weaponizing the Justice Department, weaponizing the FBI. We can't let this continue to go on because it's ripping our country to shreds. We have such big problems, and this shouldn't be one of them. It's a hoax. The whole thing is a hoax, just like Russia, 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 just like the fake dossier was a hoax. You saw the Durham report. You saw the Mueller report. It was all a big hoax. You had two impeachments, and they lost, and we won. And we had tremendous support. But that was a hoax and a scam. And now they're doing it again. It's just a continuation, 7 years, even after I'm out. But it's called election interference. They're trying to destroy a reputation so they can win an election. That's just as bad as doing any of the other things that have been done over the last number of years, and especially during the 2020 election. So I just want to tell you, I'm an innocent man. I did nothing wrong. And we will fight this out just like we've been fighting for 7 years. It would be wonderful if we could devote our full time to making America great again. And that's exactly what we did. But now, again, our country is in decline. We're a failing nation. And this is what they do. I'm an innocent man. We will prove that again. 7 years of proving it. And here we go again. Very unfair. But that's the way it is. I just want to thank everybody. We are doing something very special for our country. We're putting America first. I always put America first. And that's why we were in a position. Unfortunately, that position is no longer valid because they've done such a poor job. But we're in a position where we're going to make America great again. I'm innocent, and we will prove that very, very soundly and hopefully very quickly. Thank you very much.
So there's a statement by former President Trump. We can't say he's wrong about any of that. And, you know, honestly, this puts the other campaigners in the Republican primary who are trying to go up against Trump in a bit of a position. I don't see how you don't support this guy at this point. I don't see how you do anything other than throw your weight of support behind the person clearly at the heart of the of fighting back against this corruption, and the one guy who's all of these globalist guns are aimed at. It just could not be more obvious how nonsensical and fabricated all of these charges are. This article in the Wall Street Journal goes on to talk about the Manhattan District Attorney's investigation into his role in hush money. A local prosecutor in Georgia said she plans to present criminal charges in August. The Trump called his allies on the phone, and that, you know, got to stop him from running because of that. I mean, it's just endless legal harassment. I guess we'll take your calls and suggestions of what Trump should do. We'll hear from some other major figures in public on the other side. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Continue to talk about this Trump indictment. Which one, you may ask? Well, the newest one. The latest, I guess you could say. They've been pursuing this case for months in Miami grand jury. They discussed whether to bring a case in Florida or Washington. Prosecutors brought charges in Miami because the focus of their probe was on Trump's actions at Mar-a-Lago, located in that jurisdiction. That might have some interesting implications that we'll get into. But this is just one of a myriad of completely baseless investigations into Donald Trump. It's like, it'd be one thing if this was like the first thing that happened, or if there had been a history of Trump like getting caught, but then getting let off, you know, getting away with it basically. So far, every, you know, major public investigation attempt to bring charges against Trump has just utterly and completely failed, whether it was the Russiagate hoax that basically crippled his entire presidency, still is spread by people, like people still call Trump a Russian agent, utterly baseless. But right, it wasn't a Hillary Clinton style, like, well, he did do all of these bad things. He did break the law a whole bunch of ways, but, you know, it's Donald Trump, so we're not going to charge him. Like, he doesn't get that privilege that other politicians, including Joe Biden, get. So it's not like this happens and it's like, oh, they're actually going to do something this time. Wow, he keeps getting caught but getting away with it. Now he's actually going to know. It's just they keep launching fake investigations that are totally baseless, that because he's never done anything wrong that they've ever presented ever, and yet they keep launching indictments. They keep launching investigations. We're in this weird dichotomy of the right seeing this as clear, obvious, very dangerous evolution of the tyrannical deep state, and basically the spy state running our politics. And it's just clearly a tyrannical overreach. It's clearly just weaponizing the Department of Justice, weaponizing law enforcement, turning formerly, at least ostensibly, seemingly unbiased and patriotic law enforcement agencies into just the political weaponry that the Democrats need, politicized arm of the federal government. That's what the right wing sees. The left wing, I guess, sees Trump as a criminal mastermind, a gangster that just keeps getting away with it because he's like a mafia don somehow. I mean, it just, again, we have this situation where, like Scott Adams says, you know, where you're watching two different movies on the same screen. Only just like almost every time we discuss something like this, only one of those visions is accurate. They can't both be accurate. This isn't just two different opinions, both of which are equally valid. One of them is true. One of them is false. We know from just a overwhelming amount of evidence that their view of this is false. Everything they claim about Donald Trump turns out to be a lie. Every investigation they launch turns out to be an embarrassing failure for them. So I don't know why they keep believing it. I don't know why they keep believing the things that they do. But they also think men are women. So these are the people we're dealing with, I guess, at this point. Trump already faces criminal charges in New York stemming from the Manhattan District Attorney's investigation into his role in a hush money payment that was made during the final stretch of the 2016 election to a porn star who he allegedly had an affair with. Again, to get into the details of that, right, the affair wasn't illegal. Lying about it both wasn't illegal and also not clear that he did. The hush money payment also not illegal. Also, Trump didn't make it. But mislabeling it or not labeling it with enough specificity, that's what they're going after him for. So there's that. And, you know, there's a couple different layers of this where you can present it just as if this and all of these indictments exist in a vacuum. And they're still ridiculous and nonsensical and clearly just politicized weaponization of the Department of Justice and the people who have unbridled privileges in this country to enforce the law as they see fit. Just an incredibly dangerous advancement. And that's if you're just looking at just what's happening with Trump. Then you put it in context with the Joe Biden scandal that very coincidentally broke on exactly the same day that these indictments were announced. What a shock. What a coincidence that was. and what was just a ridiculous series of baseless indictments become a glaringly obvious example of one-sided judiciary. Just completely insane. We'll get into what's been revealed about the Biden family a little bit later. A little compare and contrast we'll do. But in addition to the Manhattan District Attorney, you have a local prosecutor in Georgia saying she plans to present criminal charges in August related to efforts by Trump and his allies to overturn the results of the 2020 election there. In other words, when the water pipe broke and they shut down, I mean, it's just all so ridiculous. It's all so incredibly ridiculous. They just stole the election in front of everybody. Donald Trump just like calls Georgia and is like, what's going on down there? It looks like you guys are cheating right out in the open. Everybody's seeing it. Everybody's noticing what you're doing. You're cheating. And they're just like, oh, now we have to indict Trump for daring to point out how badly we cheated. I mean, it's just incredible. The federal indictment is the first to emanate from a probe by Jack Smith, the former war crimes and public corruption prosecutor that nobody'd ever heard of before now. Jack Smith. Are we sure there's even a guy named Jack Smith? Are we sure that this isn't just some figurehead that they've fabricated? As special counsel, Smith has broad discretion to run the investigation and file charges, but he ultimately reports to Merrick Garland, remember the man who was supposed to be appointed as a Supreme Court justice until President Trump won the election. So just every person in this has an axe to grind with Trump. Every single person in this has like a visceral personal hatred of Trump. America, my God. My mom always told me, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Sometimes I just have to not talk about what certain faces make me want to do. As special counsel, Smith has broad discretion. Smith's team is pursuing a separate investigation into Trump by his allies to overturn the 2020 election loss and how those efforts are related to the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. So, you know, whatever, I guess. He's just investigating whatever. He pretty much literally just has a go after Trump, get him on something mandate, and he's doing that. I mean, what does January 6th and the 2020 election have to do with classified documents? Absolutely nothing. But the same person is investigating both. It's all part of the same investigation. It really is like they are just letting us know, like, this is how it goes from now on. We'll just assign some federal bureaucrat with unlimited power, unlimited access, falsified, you know, FISA court access to your private communications, and he'll get you. He'll get you on something. Doesn't matter what it is. He's not even assigned to go after one thing. Welcome back, everybody. This is American Journal, Infowars.com, Band.video. We're going to show you some other reactions about the Trump indictment, as well as a statement from Trump's attorney. We'll continue to discuss the Trump indictment, and we'll also bring up this hour the real scandal, which is Joe Biden being caught just openly taking bribes to manipulate politics in Ukraine, that they later impeached Trump just for trying to investigate. And now a massively devastating war has broken out there, with some estimating up to 500,000 people already died as a consequence. So, hey, 500,000 deaths, destroyed country, World War III, massive reorganization of the geopolitical landscape with China taking power and combining might with Russia to reorganize the Middle East. You know, kind of a lot of fallout to that because of the open and blatant and acknowledged and even to some extent admitted corruption of the Biden family, versus Donald Trump had some papers that weren't properly stamped. So, you know, I guess if it's a compare and contrast thing, one might be more important than the other, but maybe not actually. We'll get into a little bit of what maybe the deeper reasoning behind all of this here in just a second. But again, I'm just sort of baffled how any of this is even legal. It's like, in addition to the documents inquiry, Jack Smith's team is pursuing a separate investigation into efforts by Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election loss. How those efforts related to the January 6, 2020 attack on the U.S. Capitol. The attack. You know, the protests that got a little bit out of hand, in which the only people to die were several protesters murdered, either beaten to death or shot at point blank range without warning by the Capitol Police. It's just wild. The attack on the Capitol. What that has to do with the documents, just absolutely nothing. So, I mean, unless I'm missing something here, Democrats literally just hired some dude named Jack Smith that nobody had ever heard about before now to just go after Trump. Like, whatever. Got election interference, document probe, the riot that he was close to. I mean, whatever. Just get him. Just go get him. Okay. Wasn't Jack, he was like, not even living in America. He was in some other country. Who is this Jack Smith? Maybe we should look into who this Jack Smith guy is. Sounds like a fake person, to be honest with you. Just incredible. Again, we'll get into what other people are saying about this. But in recent months, Smith's team has homed in on several key pieces of evidence, including an audio recording in which Trump acknowledged that he kept a classified Pentagon document about a potential attack on Iran, and extensive notes from one of his lawyers about the investigation, people familiar with the matter have said. Maybe that's, you know, you read these articles, and once in a while you find one little sentence that actually gives a much greater and deeper insight into what this is really all about. In other words, was Trump keeping documents that would have been some sort of bulwark against deep state interference? In other words, did he have maybe evidence of some sort of false flag attack on Iran in order to spark a war with them on behalf of Israel? Is this part of an international wartime intrigue that Donald Trump was trying to resist and had, you know, evidence of in his documents? That's one of the guesses as to what this could be about. You know, other people are saying other things that he could potentially have kept documents about, like maybe the JFK assassination, right? If he had like undeniable proof, internal documents that it was the CIA. When he leaves the presidency, he just like, yeah, I'm going to keep these with my papers just in case I need it a little bit down the road. Could very well be something like that. And they admit it here in the Wall Street Journal. Potential attack on Iran. That seems to be the thing that they're focusing on. The case comes as a separate special counsel is examining how and why classified documents dating to President Biden's time as vice president were found at his home and office. They just throw in the final segment of the, or the final sentence of this. And also there's a similar investigation going on with Joe Biden. Yeah, he had a lot more documents over a lot longer time and also has been caught blatantly taking bribes in order to use his power as vice president to sway the politics of a foreign nation in complete blatant violation of any number of laws. But we're going after Trump. But right now we're going after Trump, though. It's just incredible. This is Trump's attorney talking about the indictment. Clip number six. Here's everything so far that we really know about this indictment. Let's watch.
Now, we haven't been provided with the indictment yet. What we have right now is essentially a summons, which is a replacement for a warrant, right? Normally, indictments are accompanied by a warrant where there's an arrest. Here, we've received a summons from the Department of Justice asking us to be at the courthouse Tuesday at 3 o'clock.
And does it say how many charges there are against your client?
It doesn't perfectly mirror an indictment, but it does have some language in it that suggests what the seven charges would be. Not 100% clear that all of those are separate charges, but they basically break out from an Espionage Act charge, which is ludicrous under the facts of this case, and I can certainly explain it, and several obstruction-based type charges, and then false statement charges, which are actually, again, kind of a crazy stretch just from the facts as we know it. So there's a lot to pick at eventually from the defense side, but that appears to be the charges, and it appears to be something that will get off the ground on Tuesday.
So that's basically everything we know as of yet. The Espionage Act. They're still saying Trump is like a agent of a foreign power. They're running with the same long, long disproven lie. We'll go now to clip number three here. This is Chris Cuomo and Matt Taibbi, neither of whom any love lost for Donald Trump. This might be a little glimmer of hope here that even leftists who despise Trump, every fiber of their being, still capable of recognizing the much, 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 much greater danger of having the United States government, and especially the law enforcement of this government, completely untethered from law and order, from being unbiased, from dispensing blind justice, and instead being weaponized to go after the political opponents of the party currently in power. Maybe this indictment can finally break through to some people in a way that they're seemingly impervious to when it comes to Russiagate or any of the other myriad examples of this exact thing, same thing happening for the last decade or more. Let's go now to clip number three.
So these concerns, you know, everybody loves conspiracies these days. I'm not so sure that these investigations aren't done in a way that winds up intentionally or unintentionally helping the former president, to be honest, because every time there's a swing, it seems to expose the fact that they go after him with what seems to be at or below a level of anything that would be impressive to people reviewing the documents. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I'm obviously not a fan of Donald Trump. I wrote a book about the guy called Insane Clown President. But, you know, my feeling is if you're going to take the very extreme step of indicting somebody who's the likely nominee of the opposition party, the charge has to meet two tests. It has to be extremely serious and it has to be an airtight case. And I think both of these cases fail on both of those points.
Yeah, you know, a buddy of mine who's a very smart guy and a lawyer, but, you know, just a kind of consumer of all things relevant like yourself. He was like, hey, I don't care that it's during the election. The fact that you're running shouldn't shield you. Maybe he's running because he knows it's his best defense on these things. Maybe. But I think that to the majority, the optics are terrible. If you're swinging at somebody during an election and you don't have what we deem the goods. Now, what does that look like in this case? Do you think it comes down to, well, what are the documents he was keeping?
Well, again, I mean, I think if you are a person who grew up in a third world country, you would recognize this kind of thing as something that happens in a not entirely free society. So that's, the optics of this are terrible. I mean, there's no way around it.
The optics are terrible. Yeah, the optics are terrible because it's a terrible thing that's happening. We'll continue this on the other side. We'll take a look at what some other people are saying. It's time to break out of the mainstream media cage and admit that this is tyranny and we have to oppose it. All right, welcome back, folks. Yes, even people who hate Trump can't help but recognize that this just confirms everything that he's been saying the entire time about corruption in the federal government, about how they're willing to take a flame to the Constitution in order to stop him and by extension the American people from reclaiming their government for themselves. We'll take a look at what some of Trump's Republican opponents have to say about this indictment. Some responses better than others. I thought this response was very good. This is not one of Trump's opponents, but rather a congressional representative from Texas. Representative Wesley Hunt said this through his press office on Twitter. Statement from Congressman Hunt on the Biden DOJ indictment of President Trump. He says, on the very same day that the FBI agreed to allow the members of the Oversight Committee to review documents tying Joe Biden to a $5 million bribery scheme with a foreign national, President Trump is informed that he will be indicted by Biden's DOJ. Coincidence? You don't still believe those exist under this administration, do you? I know we live in a news cycle today that can be difficult to keep up with, so allow me to remind those who have forgotten that it was Joe Biden who was illegally in possession of numerous boxes of classified material he obtained both as United States Senator and Vice President. Neither one of those offices afforded him the authority to declassify the material. In the face of the glaring irony, I wonder, is it ignorance that drives Biden's DOJ to charge Trump over classified material, or is it hubris? Biden, Garland, and this entire administration have become drunk with power, and they will pursue every avenue available to them to destroy Donald Trump, even if it means taking an open flame to the Constitution. Last night, one of the candidates running for the GOP nomination demanded that the GOP not pledge support to a nominee if they're found guilty of this specific charge, and that if President Trump is subject of an ongoing investigation, he should just step aside. Absurd. This guy says, I have another idea. If the candidates running for the GOP nomination do not swiftly denounce the weaponization of federal government to destroy Joe Biden's top political opponent, they should step aside. Donald J. Trump represents an existential threat to the status quo, a system that has failed America, and to the most unpopular, unqualified, and unfit president to ever hold this office in a century. That's why this election interference persists. We the people will not be deterred, we the people will not be fooled, and we the people will continue to stand firm in support of a man who sacrificed everything to restore our nation to the glory she deserves. Tuesday will be yet another soiled chapter in the great American decline, but it's always darkest before the dawn, and the dawn is coming. That's what they're most afraid of. America, President Trump will be the Republican nominee. I think that's accurate. And then we move to people contesting this position as Republican nominee. No Surrender 200 on Twitter compiled both these. This is Vivek Ramaswamy and Ron DeSantis. He says, compare these statements for impact and sincerity between Vivek and DeSantis. Vivek says this, quote, "We can't have two tiers of justice, one for Trump and another for Biden, one for Assange, another for Manning, one for BLM and Antifa, another for peaceful protesters on January 6th. I'd never thought we'd see the day when the U.S. president deputizes the DOJ to arrest his lead rival in the middle of an election. Obama shamefully tried to deputize the FBI to infiltrate Trump's 2016 campaign, but they're leaving nothing to chance this time around. The federal police state is outright arresting Trump. This is an effort to every... This is an affront to every citizen. We cannot devolve into a banana republic where the party in power uses police force to arrest its political opponents. It's hypocritical for the DOJ to selectively prosecute Trump but not Biden. There are also serious legal questions about the president's power to declassify documents and the potential illegality of overclassification of federal documents in the first place. That's for the courts to decide, but we the people decide who governs this nation. It would be much easier for me to win this election if Trump weren't in the race, but I stand on principles over politics. I commit to pardon Trump promptly on January 20th and restore the rule of law and order in our country." Again, I'd say the only appropriate thing at this point is to be against. Like, if you're against the deep state, you got to be on Trump's team. Like, to still be competing with Trump, I don't know, to me, like, you're on their team. You're on the deep state's team, obviously. And then we go to Ron DeSantis. DeSantis says, "The weaponization of federal law enforcement represents a mortal threat to a free society. We have for years witnessed an uneven application of the laws depending on political affiliation. Why so zealous in pursuit of Trump, yet so passive about Hillary or Hunter? The DeSantis administration will bring accountability to the DOJ, exercise political bias, and end weaponization once and for all." Yeah. Weak, 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 weak. Like, the biggest signal that these people could give that they're actually against the deep state would be to just, like, drop out. Just to be like, you know what? If you're going to go after Trump this hard, we'll show you what the consequence is. He's going to get more support than ever, including from his opponents in the Republican Party. But, of course, deep state is a Bush family plant there to adopt, co-opt, and then disregard Trump's policies once he's in office. Now, I'm not sure how true that. I haven't been able to look into this, but it's an interesting concept if it's true. Awakened Outlaw on Twitter says, "If you think leftists hate Clarence Thomas now, just wait until they figure this out. As he is in Florida, it's likely Trump will be arraigned in the 11th Circuit Court. The 11th Circuit oversight is assigned to Clarence Thomas, Associate Justice. Each of the 13 federal circuit courts is assigned to one Supreme Court justice who considers appeals, e.g. emergency requests and other motions. So Clarence Thomas may have some say in what happens with Donald Trump. But why would the Biden administration choose to do this in Miami if that was the case? Clearly, Clarence Thomas is not on their side either. Trump responds to this saying it's a total hoax, calls it the box hoax, boxes hoax. Well, we'll watch a few more just responses to this, but we'll move on in the next hour to Marjorie Taylor Greene explaining what she saw on that document that shows that not only did Joe Biden take a massive bribe from Burisma in order to wield his influence in order to stop a prosecutor from investigating them in Ukraine, this would be the monetary influence behind his Son of a bitch, you got fired. Comment. That, of course, Trump was trying to investigate, that they impeached him over, because Ukraine has long been a hive of corruption, human trafficking, and other nefarious deeds by the traitorous international scumbags that wear America like a skin mask. We'll go to that. We'll also talk a little bit about who this Jack Smith character is. I mean, will it surprise you to know that Jack Smith, I mean, this will surprise you. Will it surprise you to know that Jack Smith hasn't lived in America in 5 years? Will it surprise you to know that 13 years ago, Jack Smith was a part of a major scandal because there were a ton of investigations into congressional corruption, and then he swooped in and dismantled all the investigations and let all of the corrupt politicians off the hook? Will it surprise you to know that this man has decades of deep state activity where he's allowing criminals to go free on behalf of the deep state? Will it surprise you to know that his wife is very good friends with Michelle Obama and is the director of the documentary about Michelle Obama? Does it surprise you to know that the special prosecutor assigned to Donald Trump is in fact a Democrat partisan with a gigantic history of using his position as prosecutor to cover up the crimes of deep state actors? Nah, it shouldn't surprise you in the slightest. The only surprise here is that they actually think they're going to get away with it, and they're actually that blatant. Yeah, he hasn't lived in the United States since 2018. He works in The Hague. He is literally just a globalist power player. It's absolutely incredible. Let's go to clip 10 here. This is Stephen A. Smith, also on the Cuomo show, saying what we all know to be true. They can't beat Trump without cheating, so they're cheating. Let's watch.
Biden wasn't that popular of a candidate, at least before the primaries in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, up until that point, he wasn't even in the game as far as a lot of people were concerned. And so because of that, when you look at it from that perspective, Chris, what it comes down to is you're going to have people sitting up there on his side and saying they can't beat him legitimately. And it's going to add it's going to add momentum to his argument that they're exhausting themselves with doing everything they can to prevent him from being the Republican nominee because they can't beat him.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to say.
Well,
no,
that's
matter
his
what
case.
It's like, that's what they're going to say. Yeah, because it's true, because you know that it's true, because it's obviously true. So I don't get. I mean, it reminds me of the COVID stuff. It reminds me of so much where it's just like, we can't let this truth get out because that makes it look like the people we hate are right. And we have to not let them be right. And it's like, or you can just come over to our side. You can just recognize that we've been right the entire time about everything and join us on the side of light and of patriotism and defeat this evil, or you can be a part of it. All right, folks. Yeah, we're going to just continue talking about corruption here, the fake corruption born from corruption, the accusations of corruption, the Trump that's actually evidence of corruption of the deep state, the DOJ, as well as actual corruption from Biden that's been covered up and hidden by that very same DOJ. It's all just very obvious. None of this should be confusing at all. It's exactly just right in front of your eyes. You can see it or not. It's up to you. We're going to continue to show some reactions to this. Let's go to Mark Levine here, going scorched earth after the indictment of Donald Trump.
President Trump is 76 years old. If the Department of Justice gets his way, he will die in federal prison. Just by one of these counts, conspiracy to obstruct justice, which has a 20-year maximum sentence. This is a disgusting, disgusting mark on American history for the future to come, by these bandits in the White House, by the Democrat Party that don't play fair anymore. They don't want to just win elections. They want to take control of this country. They want one-party rule. And they have used the Department of Justice and the FBI to get what they want. Merrick Garland is a mob lawyer. That's what he is. Jack Reed is a rogue Soviet-style prosecutor. The Presidential Records Act is not a criminal statute, and it was never intended to be. The Espionage Act of 1917 was passed under Woodrow Wilson, another corrupt president. Woodrow Wilson used it to go after his adversaries, and they imprisoned 2,000 people. So I suppose over there at the Department of Injustice, and this clown prosecutor spent a lot of time at The Hague, they probably figured these laws could be used to try and entrap Trump. All these obstruction issues that they claim, where the former attorney general, Bill Barr, comes up here and bloviates about it, and all the formers coming on talking about obstruction. They have them on obstruction. There'd be no obstruction issue of any kind, not even in anybody's imagination, had they not criminalized this case. This is a document case. A document case where a president of the United States or a former president faces 100 years in federal prison. Is this some kind of a sick joke on the American people? Joe Biden says he never told them what to do. Joe Biden had to sign off on that's becoming a National Archives case to have it go to the Department of Justice. Who does he think he's lying to? The American people? This is a guy that's got documents from the time he was in the U.S. Senate, for God's sakes, in his garage. I don't want to hear from the legal analysts the technicalities about false statements and obstruction. This should never have been a criminal case. Willful retention of documents. Well, what's the unwillful retention of documents mean? They're throwing all these process crimes and all these crimes that grow out of the criminal investigation against Trump. What did he do with the documents? Did he sell them to the enemy? No. That's why we have an Espionage Act, not to trick up a president. What did he do? Did he burn them all? No. The government has all the documents back. So there is no violation of the Presidential Records Act at this point. But they throw the book at him. They go after his attorneys. They make them testify. They're attorneys under the crime fraud exception to attorney-client privilege. That means he didn't have due process. His own lawyers were being subjected to interrogations. And they had hundreds of in-person people testifying in front of grand juries. Thousands of collections of documents. For what? For what? And they indict him today? They indict him today in Miami? All of a sudden it's in Miami? All of a sudden we have a Florida grand jury? Because the moron in Washington figured out that there are venue issues that could lose him his case. This guy, this prosecutor, he lost 8-0 in the U.S. Supreme Court when they overturned the conviction of the former governor of Virginia because this jerk took a statute and expanded it. A jury in North Carolina wouldn't convict John Edwards because this jerk took a campaign.
Yeah, he's talking about Jack Smith's history of failure as a special prosecutor before he was shipped off to The Hague. We'll get into that on the other side. Stay with us. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal, Infowars.com, band.video. I'll go ahead and open up phone lines right now. You know, we have other stuff to cover. We'll get into some very intriguing conspiracy theories about the Canadian fires. We ran through a couple potential options, potential suspects yesterday. But a very, very interesting new twist to these fires has started to spread. And we'll get into that a little bit later. We are going to get into, in a similar theme to what we're talking about here, I mean, we'll get into the Joe Biden revelations, not accusations, revelations, right? This is firsthand evidence of everything the Biden family has, power players in the deep state global conspiracy, using their power to manipulate geopolitics to their own ends and for their own gain. We'll get into that a little bit later as well. But give us a call about any of these topics or anything else that you'd like to cover. 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. We'll show the video of Marjorie Taylor Greene discussing what she saw in the skiff, the document that the FBI had been hiding, that they had to threaten Chris Wray with not obstruction of justice, but contempt of Congress to get him to reveal, even though they should still charge him. Man, it really, like, we, the American people, man, good Lord. just trapped between a pair of snakes, I guess. Trying to come up with two animals that could embody this, but they're just both snakes. But seriously, seriously. Was it Beards and Beardly on Twitter yesterday was like, yeah, Kevin McCarthy says this is the final straw. He is going to seriously consider sending a very strongly worded letter. Just the Democrats are just savages, just ruthlessly tearing through the Constitution, just abolishing every semblance of law and order and due process and having an unbiased, fair, blind justice system, just without even the slightest resistance from the Republicans. We're like, we might hold you in contempt of Congress unless you, okay, no, never mind. Never mind then. But you, careful. Careful next time, you. Like, you understand this is an existential conflict for our country. This tug of war game between the unelected deep state bureaucrats and the duly elected representatives of the people. Like, what our whole country was founded on. The basis of our entire governmental system predicated on the latter being above the former, right? The duly elected representatives having the power at the end of the day over the unelected spy state. But that's what will be decided by the outcome of these cases and more going on right now. Their side is vicious and willing to do anything. Our side, it can't be bothered to do crap. Their side has nothing, no reason to go after Trump, no evidence, no big crime that they're pursuing, but they go after him ruthlessly, savagely, like they're starving animal jumping on a carcass. But the Republicans have everything they need, just reams of evidence as to the criminal wrongdoing of the Biden family. Just tens of thousands of photos of Hunter Biden trafficking women, starting companies, and partnering with the spy chief of China, in his own words, the Russiagate investigation, with just example after example of them admitting in their own words, we are going to have an insurance plan. We're going to stop Donald Trump from becoming president. They had that for 5 years. Nothing is being done. Nothing is being done by the people that actually have the evidence of actual criminal wrongdoing that's taken place for years. But the people with no evidence and just purely motivated by political animus are just proceeding as confident as you could possibly imagine. Insane. Completely insane. So let's get into old Jack Smith here, shall we? Mark Levin, in that video that we just played, touched on some of it. You honestly could not ask for a more stereotypical, almost cartoonish caricature of a deep state cutout. It's pretty shocking, actually. I guess this is like a pretty common theme with leftists in general. That should be another thing that I should compile. It happens basically all the time in the local level, on the national level, in the corporate world, the entertainment world, and in politics, that leftists fail up. It's this failing up type of process that takes place. I mean, you can look at things like, you know, Hollywood, the entertainment industry in general, right? Some guy makes a Star Wars movie. All Star Wars movies are guaranteed billions of dollars. They fail. They somehow fail. They somehow take just a sure thing, like an underhanded toss to a professional baseball player, and they just whiff it. Just completely miss, completely fail. And then in response, they're given like another billion-dollar property to mess with. It's just like, what? Why would you do this? Like, what is the thinking behind this? Do you want them to fail again? You clearly can't be happy with the results, but you're giving him another even bigger job. Like, what is happening here? And then on the, you know, local level or state level or anything like that, you can take, for example, a city councilman here in Austin, Jimmy Flanagan, who was beaten by our preferred candidate, Mackenzie Kelly. He'd been city councilman for years. He is rejected by the voters. kicked out of office and immediately given like a multi-million dollar job overseeing some government program to dispense more money to other people. It's just like there's no losing with them. I get, you know, if you're an immoral scumbag, like why you'd want to be a Democrat, the options are great. It's like you run for office, Soros pours millions of dollars into your campaign, the media covers up for you, portrays your opponent as the worst thing in the world, right? And some sort of Nazi racist white supremacist bigot, celebrates you as some sort of liberator. You're a Harriet Tubman, come again. And even if you fail, even if with all of these benefits and all of this acclamation, you still fail, then your prize for even having run will be like a multi-million dollar contract from your allies in government to oversee some construction of a homeless person hotel or something, right? It's insane how often this happens. And Jack Smith is sort of the best, or like a very good example of this, because he was an associate U.S. attorney in Tennessee for a long time, but basically had to resign in disgrace, was then sent to The Hague. He's lived in the Netherlands since 2018, where he's just helped prosecute the war crimes in Kosovo. Okay, what? So for the last 6 years, just been in some obscure courtroom in the international city of The Hague, prosecuting Kosovo war crime. Just to be called out of retirement. This is the best guy we can get, apparently. This is the best guy we can get. And some things that are sort of worth noting is that since 2011, Jack Smith has been married to Katie Chivigny, documentary filmmaker known for Becoming, an award-winning 2020 documentary of Michelle Obama. Okay? So, just in case you're wondering, the political atmosphere this guy operates in, his wife is like best friends with Michelle Obama. You get Michelle Obama's good friend to become the special prosecutor, Donald Trump, and just say, hey, January 6th, election meddling, bribery to porn stars, classified documents, like whatever you think you need to charge him with, you investigate that. No holds barred. Go after him. We'll rig the grand jury. We'll get all the headlines we need to get. Just open corruption. And we'll get into some of Jack Smith's professional history on the other side. But basically everything he's ever done has been overturned by higher courts. It's pretty amazing. All right, folks, welcome back. We'll go out to your phone calls here momentarily. Let's just talk a little bit more about who this Jack Smith guy is, this prosecutor. It's just, I don't know. The whole thing, the whole way this works is just completely insane. And we'll get into what, like, the real corruption at the top of the pyramid here in just a little bit. But again, he apparently has just been given total carte blanche to oversee criminal investigations into whatever he wants with Trump. January 6th Capitol attack, the 2020 election, government records, just, you know, whatever. Insane, but okay. Like that alone is just, it's wild, just utterly wild. These things have literally nothing to do with each other. 2020 election fraud, January 6th, and keeping classified documents in Mar-a-Lago, completely separate things. But for some reason, the same guy is prosecuting anything against Trump that he can get his hands on. What? And again, who is this guy? All right, well, let's take a look, shall we? We can go back to, we'll do it here. We can start here. Well, no, let's go back even farther. Unless there's another Jack Smith. That's the same guy. It was all the way from back in 2010. Justice Department is criticized as corruption cases close. The Justice Department has shut down a wave of high-profile investigations of members of Congress over the past few months, drawing criticism from the government that the government's premier anti-corruption agency has lost its nerve after the disastrous collapse last year of its case against former Senator Ted Stevens. This month, lawyers for Senator John Ensign, Republican of Nevada, announced that federal prosecutors had told them they would not charge the senator with conspiring to help a former aide. A few days later, representatives for Representative Jerry Lewis, facing scrutiny for steering government spending to campaign donors, said that they would not be charged either. Other federal corruption investigations known to have been ended without charges focused on Tom DeLay, the former House Majority Leader, Republican of Texas, Representative Don Young, Republican of Alaska, Representative Alan B. Mullahan, Representative Democrat of West Virginia. They're gun shy, says J. Gerald Herbert, the executive director of Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan group that seeks greater disclosure of how money influences politics. But in interviews, Jack Smith, chief of the public integrity section at the Justice Department, and his supervisor, Lenny Brewer, the assistant attorney general for the criminal division, hotly contested the contention that prosecutors were in retreat from taking on congressional corruption. So, yeah, of course, they wouldn't discuss why they wouldn't bring charges in any of these. Mr. Smith, they say, took over the section 6 months ago. Before that, he'd helped prosecute police officers in the Abner Loomy police brutality case in New York and investigated war crimes for the International Criminal Court. One explanation behind the flurry of closings was the timing of Mr. Smith's arrival. One of his first steps, he says, was to review every open case. Again, this is like the far back history. This is 13 years ago. In 2010, there were like all of these investigations into congressional corruption, people on both sides of the aisle are all being pursued, and then Jack Smith comes in and just dismisses all of them. He just comes in and is like, yeah, we're not doing any of these. We're not going to actually prosecute any of these. Incredible. Mr. Brewer said, there's no question that if we thought a case was going where it needed to, because the facts that were and it was too old, we should make the tough decision to move on. Both officials said that whether the subject of investigation was a member of Congress made no difference to their evaluations of cases. That assertion drew some skepticism. That's all the way back in 2010. People are like, yeah, this Jack Smith guy is letting off people for no good reason. Why is he doing that? Well, we never found out. And then he went to Nashville to be a special prosecutor. This article is just kind of odd. It's from the Tennessean in 2017. It says Jack Smith to resign as Nashville federal prosecutor's office from Nashville's federal prosecutor's office. So Jack Smith, who's been leading the federal prosecutor's office in Nashville since March, on Friday announced plans to leave the U.S. Department of Justice. Smith said, though he's leaving the exceptional public servants in office, and consummate professionals in law enforcement will continue to focus serving the Nashville community. It's unclear what Smith will do next. He's like, though not looking to leave the Department of Justice, Smith said he was offered an incredible opportunity and after much consideration decided to leave the DOJ. Apparently, he left the DOJ after 16 years, including 5 years as chief of the public integrity section of Washington, D.C., before coming to Nashville in 2015. So he's chief integrity investigator. It just lets everybody off the hook, goes to Tennessee for like a couple months or however long. And then, or yeah, a couple years, I guess, in 2015 to 2017. And it's like, I'm resigning for no reason. I don't want to, but I am. Goodbye. And he leaves and goes to The Hague and lives in the Netherlands and apparently falls off a scooter and breaks his leg. And that's like a big deal, I guess. They've mentioned that in a bunch of articles. But even when working in Washington, before getting to Nashville, Smith oversaw corruption cases against former Virginia Governor Bob McDonald, former Arizona U.S. Rep. Rick Renzi, and New York Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Convictions against McDonald and Silver were later overturned. Okay, so he goes into D.C. as the chief integrity whatever. Lets most of the people off the hook, doesn't charge most of the criminal activity they've discovered. The ones that he does charge, almost all of them get immediately overturned so badly that it sets the whole court back. That's what the Tennessean reports later, or earlier, I guess. This would have been an earlier article. Justices overturned former Virginia Governor's McDonald corruption conviction. The Supreme Court granted a reprieve Monday to a former Republican governor of Virginia convicted of corruption, and in doing so made it harder for prosecutors to use federal fraud statutes against public officials. In a unanimous decision that could benefit politicians and other public officials entangled by bribery, extortion, and fraud statutes, the justices vacated the conviction of former Governor Bob McDonald while leaving open the possibility of a new trial. Once seen as a potential Republican vice presidential candidate, McDonald was convicted in 2014 and suspended in 2 years. And sentenced to 2 years in prison for accepting luxury gifts and loans. But the high court ruled that these acts were commonplace actions taken on behalf of constituents. So isn't that interesting? This Jack Smith guy doesn't charge most of the slam dunk cases they have against congressmen, does go after Bob McDonnell in Virginia as governor. Apparently wins his case somehow. But then the entire court overturns it, unanimously says, no, this is not right. This guy should have never been charged. this is ridiculous. You know, good for him. He gets the conviction overturned, but his life is still ruined. Once seen as a potential presidential, vice presidential nominee. Well, not anymore. Not since Jack Smith fabricated a, you know, corrupt case against him. Yeah, he eventually got out of it. It was eventually overturned, but not after years of litigation and millions of dollars in ruining his political prospects. That's what Jack Smith does. And then he just moves on. He just goes on to the next thing. Yeah, here's a promotion. Great job, you know, getting the one conviction you did that was completely overturned and an embarrassment to the extent that now we're worried that like other politicians are going to see this as a license to commit fraud because they're like, wow, if that's what it's like to get prosecuted, like this will be easy. I'll get away with this for sure. So just a corrosive influence on the entire judicial system. And then he was sent to The Hague for a while to prosecute Kosovo war crimes. Okay. And then he's just silent for like 5 years until he suddenly appears as the bulldog to go get Trump. Just go get him, boy. And now he is. That's what he's doing. So maybe this will be overturned by the entire Supreme Court in 4 years. But before then, they'll have destroyed Trump's presidential prospect. They'll have bankrupted him. They'll have dragged him through the mud and ruined years of his life. And then they'll get away with it because apparently, you know, attempted corruption is not a punishable crime in this country. I think it probably should be. All right, welcome back, folks. Let's go to your phone calls now. Diana in Connecticut, thanks so much for calling in. You are on the air.
No problem.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, go ahead, Diana. Yep.
So for the past 3 days, I've been in a candle warmer. I've been taking a tea. Like the tea light or the tea candles.
Mm.
And I've been burning in the candle warmer vinegar, and I was able to clear out the air all through over me. And then, so as I left my house, I noticed everywhere else was foggy. So since I realized this is cleaning the air, I've also tried this thing called Triad Ergo that I got from Christopher Key all the way in Florida, you know, the vaccine police.
Okay.
So I'm also using that to clean out the ozone. And then love breaks all curses. So I'm constantly thinking love in my head. And I see the skies clear. And also, I don't know if you guys heard about electroculture, which is if when people want to plant. So basically, they can take a wooden stick and wrap around it a copper or a brass. You coil it around the stick. And the wood, you put it into the ground where you're going to plant at. And half of it is on the stick. The other half is like pointing towards the sky, and that helps to produce like a lot more produce. But yeah, I've been burning vinegar right here for the past 3 days, and I've been able to clear out the skies right here, and the birds are singing and they're coming close to here. The animals are coming to my window. Yesterday I seen a blue jay. The squirrels are coming over here. And I could just hear life right next to me.
So you've been, of course, you've been in the smoke and the smog from the wildfires. I've seen a lot of people online saying that the smog smelled like plastic burning. Did you smell that?
Yeah, it smelled like it was really orange the other day. And I'm like, I opened up my window. I'm like, oh, this is weird. Mm. And then I see like I'm sneezing. So that's a quick reaction for me that tells me that there's a foreign protein around here and my body wants to get rid of it. So
that
as soon as I noticed that I was going to start sneezing, like the air smelled like it actually, to me, it felt like it was coming from underground. It doesn't feel like it was coming from the sky.
Okay.
Like,
well, that's strange.
I naturally think about dumps, you know, deep underground military bases. I think about it, saving the children.
I think it's pretty well established that, you know, most of the smog is coming from the, you know, just massive wildfires in Canada, hundreds of them now. Thank you for that call, Diana. Actually, I want to, sticking on the same topic, want to go to Clown Car in New York. Clown Car, you've been fogged out there in New York. Thanks for calling in. Thank you, Diana, for that call. Clown Car, go ahead. What is what's your experience with the Canada smoke there in New York City? Clown Car?
Yes, Clown Car. Hold on. No, I was talking to my friend Bobby the Animal Steel. All right, I'll talk to you, Bob.
All right. So, go ahead, Clown Car. You're on the air.
All right. So the smoke that came from Canada, I believe, is a direct response from the smoke that went up from Ohio train derailment burning right up to Ohio. Because they said they had to burn all the dead trees out, remember? So why do they have all these dead trees all of a sudden? Well, from the Ohio burning out. Now watch this. So last night in Brooklyn, as the fog's coming in, I'm starting to notice this like moisture on my window. So I hit my windshield wipers. And I'm like, wow, this stuff isn't moving. I reach out of my car, I grab on, and it's like little plastic droplets. And I'm moving it with my fingers, and it's like glue. It wouldn't come off or move on the window. And you can see in the video. I sent it to Matt. Now, all the cars on the block have it. I drove 5 blocks out of the way. These cars have it. So I'm guessing all the cars in Brooklyn have this. It's like it looks like somebody took sugar and water and like poured it on your windshield.
All right, we'll have to pull that video in. I would like to see that. What does it smell like?
So now, it smelled. All right, this is what it smelled like. It smelled like after 9/11, that smoldering cement plastic combo burning of everything at once. That's what it smelled like. Like, not so much that death smell, but it's definitely a burning. It doesn't smell like wood burning. It doesn't smell like a forest fire. That's another thing I want to bring.
Well, that's what I've been hearing. But hold on. I want to circle back to. So, your theory, I guess, is that the Ohio train accident killed a bunch of trees, like the chemicals in that killed a bunch of trees, and it's those trees that are now providing the kindling for the fire?
Yes, that's why the fire that's coming here, all right, so since when is forest smoke heavier than the air? Why is it traveling across the ground in a yellow haze across New York? Because we are being poisoned. Mm. That is heavier than air, therefore it's toxic. Figure it out. Pretty simple. I'm an idiot, but honk, honk.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Here's
an interesting connection, because that has been one of the, you know, primary things about this that has caused so much interest is the color of the smoke coming from the wildfires in Canada. I've seen wildfires multiple times. They've never been orange. The smoke is never orange. It's always a gray smoke, whether it's Colorado or California. I've seen this smoke. I've been in places that are inundated with fog because of wildfires burning a couple hundred miles away. It's never orange. So why is this smoke orange? Well,
because it is heavier than oxygen, toxic gas. Nice talking to you, Bobby. All the best, brother. Yes, brother.
What about the big explosion in Beirut a couple years ago? Do you remember that massive explosion in the Beirut docks?
It was like a docking bay area, and it was like, and the guy was in like the building next door, and when it blew up, it like literally like came through his house, shooting the windows, right?
What
do you think? Do you think they put ammonium nitrate in the?
That's exactly what it is. If you bring up videos or photos of that Beirut explosion, I think it should be tested. I know that some places are starting to test some of the smoke. A place in Virginia is, you know, trying to test the air filters. I guess my screen's not coming up now, but the video of the Beirut explosion is distinctly red, and that was, of course, ammonium nitrate being held. Can we not get my computer screen the images of it? The photos of it, when the ammonium nitrate actually explodes and the smoke spreads. The first fire was a minor one, and then the ammonium nitrate was the second big explosion that everybody filmed. Or if you just search, what color does ammonium nitrate burn? It burns reddish brown, which is kind of interesting, which is a little bit interesting to me. So you've got these massive forest fires in Canada, for some reason, burning a brown-orange color that's totally unlike any other forest fire you can point to in history, and yet that smoke and that smog is almost exactly the same color as ammonium nitrate smoke. Ammonium nitrate. Oh, and reminder, that explosion, that Beirut explosion, that was 3,000 pounds, or perhaps I think I should say 3,000 tons of ammonium nitrate. Explosion rocked the whole city, buildings falling over, just massive, unimaginable size. That was 3,000 tons. the ammonium nitrate that went missing from the train a week ago, or, you know, however long ago, just a few days ago, 30,000 tons. 10 times the amount that caused that explosion. So here you've got all of these forest fires cropping up at exactly the same time all across Canada. Just a couple weeks after 30,000 tons of ammonium nitrate goes missing, and the smoke that's now wafting down towards northeast, or covered the northeast for the last couple days, is that exact same color and perhaps smells a lot like ammonium nitrate might smell. An interesting connection. Did the ammonium nitrate from that train end up as fuel for the Canadian wildfires? Or is it just because, like in California, the climate activists in that area of Canada refused to let them, you know, clean up the forest? Self-fulfilling prophecy about so-called climate change. Maybe it'll be investigated one day, but probably not. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we will be going out to your phone calls in this segment. But I want to go first to this video by Marjorie Taylor Greene. She, of course, is on the House Oversight Committee that was granted access to the formerly hidden documents about Joe Biden that the FBI had. Story at Fox News. Joe Biden allegedly paid $5 million by Burisma executive as part of a bribery scheme, according to an FBI document. This is the document that they were demanding. The FBI was refusing to give it to them. They threatened Christopher Wray with contempt of Congress, and they came to the agreement that the document wouldn't be released, but the House Oversight Committee could go take a look at it in a secure room. And Marjorie Taylor Greene saw that document, read it, and apparently immediately took notes right after and gave this press conference. Let's watch Marjorie Taylor Greene here talking about the FBI's FD-1023 form implicating Joe Biden in a political bribery pay-to-play scheme. Let's watch.
Reading this form today shows the pure distinction. This information, this source that came forward, it's a paid informant by the FBI. This has nothing to do with Giuliani. This has nothing to do with the information that he brought forward in 2020. It's totally separate, and it's extremely credible because he's a paid informant. I made some notes after I left the skiff based on the information, and I'll share that with you guys right now. Basically, what was happening there is back in 2015, 2016, Burisma was looking to buy a U.S.-based oil and gas company, and this came from being advised by Hunter Biden and his partners. Biden said Shokin was corrupt. That was around the time of this meeting, was when Joe Biden, as vice president, had said that the prosecutor Shokin was corrupt. They hired Hunter on the board to make the problems go away. That's what they specifically said. Hunter advised that they could raise more money if they bought a U.S. company. So the informant was trying to do the right thing and trying to advise Burisma that they shouldn't go this route. They should hire an attorney, work out their problems that they were being investigated for because they were having other legal problems. And that's why they were being investigated by this prosecutor, Shokin. The informant was advising them, don't go this route. Why would you buy another U.S. company while you're under investigation? That's not a good idea. So he's trying to tell them to do the right thing. The owner of Burisma said that Hunter was stupid and that his other business partner was smart. He also said that he paid $5 million to one Biden, and he paid $5 million to another Biden. And it was all a bribery to get Shokin fired and end the investigation into Burisma. He also told the informant this is common practice in Russia and Ukraine. It's common practice. It's part of business there. That's how their culture works, that they will pay bribery money in order to get business deals done. And that many businesses, they take that into account. They put it in.
Marjorie Taylor Greene goes on a little bit longer talking about what she saw in that document. But just to get the full scope of this down, Again, the story's at Fox News. The confidential source stated, Burisma executive said, I have to pay the Bidens $50,000 each, to which the Burisma executive replied, it's not $50,000, it's $5 million. $5 million for one Biden, $5 million for the other Biden. The Burisma executive told the confidential human source, according to a source familiar with the matter, a source familiar with the document, the $5 million appeared as a reference to a kind of retainer Burisma paid. So just open bribery, pay to play with a foreign government and a foreign company through Hunter Biden as the intermediary. This, in addition to the testimony by Tony Babalinsky, thank you. Just overwhelming evidence of Biden corruption. Of course, Biden also is on film bragging about this exact thing, saying he was actually using his position as vice president to withhold $1 billion of funds to Ukraine, extorting them, essentially blackmailing them into firing the prosecutor who was investigating Burisma, who had just paid him $5 million. I mean, it's just clear cut, plain as day. Hunter Biden deeply involved in this. All of this is shocking and incredible, but isn't it even more so when you realize that the FBI has known this the entire time and has had this information without acting on it the entire time for several years? Even as Trump wanted to investigate this and he was impeached over it, they withheld the evidence and allowed all of that charade to continue and spiral out to the point now that we are on the verge of World War III over that country and that corruption that is centered around Biden and not just O'Biden, but of course he was vice president at the time of President Barack Obama. And with that, I want to go to Hobbs in Nebraska, because Hobbs, you want to talk about the Obama connection to this bribe. And so much of what we talk about here goes back to Obama. I mean, he was the president when the FBI launched the Russiagate investigation that they knew was fake with fabricated evidence provided by Hillary Clinton. It was Obama that allowed that. It was Obama that was the president while Joe Biden was his vice president and doing all of this corruption behind the scenes. Hobbs, thanks for calling in. What is the Obama connection to this bribe?
Hey, good morning, Harrison. Good morning, Info Warriors. So the possible Obama connection to the bribery scandal is that when Biden was given this apparent $5 million bribe, he was the vice president. And we all know that the vice president really has no power to make any type of legislation or set any type of policies. Dan Bongino has been hitting on this for the last couple of days, that the reason that the FBI and the media is passing on covering or prosecuting any of this is because they're not protecting Biden, they're protecting Obama. Because to the left, Obama is like Ronald Reagan is to the right, is how Dan Bongino puts it. So if Obama knew about this corrupt pay-for-play, it would have to be in the capacity that whatever policy suggestions that Joe Biden is bringing to him would have to be enacted by him. Well, and with that in mind,
remember, Obama, yeah. Obama made Biden his point man on Ukraine. Like, that was one of the things that – that was one of the tasks that Obama gave to Biden, was he was like, okay, this whole Ukraine mess, you're in charge of it. So, you know, he delegated that to Biden. But, yeah, he was president at the time, yeah.
Right. But what I'm getting at here is if Biden is the point man on Ukraine and he's giving policy suggestions to Obama to be enacted by Obama, it would make sense that Obama would know about the reception of the $5 million bribe. So what I'm getting at is if Biden comes to Obama and says, hey, I'm going to get $5 million if we enact this piece of policy, do you think that somebody like Obama is going to be like, oh, I'm really happy for you, Joe. Have fun with your $5 million. Or do you think it's going to be like, okay, well, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
That's the point that I'm trying to make here. And if that's the case, then there should be a paper trail that leads back to Obama receiving something as well. If we can find the quid pro quo leading Biden to these policy decisions, then there ought to be a trail that leads back to Obama as well. And if that can be found, then the whole house of cards comes crashing down.
Well, sure, but I think the fact that Biden was vice president to Obama at the time, I mean, the buck stops with Obama. I mean, I think anything that implicates Biden as vice president also implicates Obama, since, as you're pointing out, you know, nothing could really happen without his approval because he was the one delegating the process to Biden. Although, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Biden withheld this from Obama. I also wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the oversight apparatus saw this was going on at the time, like the FBI had this document for years. And I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, went to Obama and said, here's what we think is going on. And yeah, then he goes to Joe and they make a little deal with each other, a little pizza trade of some sort. I don't really know. So yeah, it's just open corruption, and the FBI has had this for a very long time. And while acting in a willfully corrupt manner to go after totally knowingly fabricated evidence, manipulating the FISA court and going after Donald Trump, they were sitting on bombshell firsthand testimony from multiple sources, some American, some FBI informants, some business partners to Hunter Biden, as well as, of course, they had the laptop, the Hunter Biden laptop that had and continues to have evidence of all of this wrongdoing there. So, again, it's just almost impossible to explain the level of just corruption at the top, just open, blatant corruption that is covered up by our deep state, who simultaneously is acting as the attack dog of the current administration to go after their primary political opponent. We'll be back in the next hour with more of your phone calls. We're going to show a video of a speech that I gave earlier this week, about a week ago on Sunday. Please do go to InfoWarsStore.com to support everything that we do here. So much of what we cover now is just the outcome and the final step of stuff we've been talking about forever. It's finally coming out to the wider public, but if you're an InfoWarrior, you've known about all this for a while. All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to American Journal. Third hour has begun. Later this hour, we'll be joined by Daniel Miller of the Texas Nationalist Movement to talk about some big steps being made towards secession in this great state. We're going to take your calls before that. Before we do any of that, I'd like to show you just a little preview of a speech that I gave last weekend at the Cause Fest. It's now up in full. It's about 15 minutes long. You can find it at band.video there at the top of the site. It's called Narrative War. I hope you enjoy it. Here's a little teaser of it, the first couple minutes. Let's watch.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Hi. My name is Harrison Smith, and I wanted to start today with a little piece of advice that my dad gave me. He texted me this morning, and he said this: I hope your speech goes well today. My unsolicited advice: let the big dog eat. Now, I have no idea what that could possibly mean, so if you can figure it out, find me backstage and let me know. As some of you may know, I host a show called American Journal on InfoWars each and every weekday morning, 8 to 11 Central Standard Time at band.video, brought to you by Survival Shield X3, now back in stock and on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. So some X3 fans in the house. Good to see. We cover, of course, political news, current events, and culture, or what we refer to as a satanic cabal conspiracy trying to enslave humanity. And that means that every day I wake up, like we all do, to a dizzying array, a maelstrom of horrors beyond human comprehension. And it can seem overwhelming at times to deal with the headlines, from street crime and violence to the indoctrination of children to deep state corruption to billionaires spraying chemicals in the air to try to block out the sun, and now they're trying to ban food. It can all seem incredibly hopeless. Even the occasional piece of good news that scuttles across my desk or my screen is hardly a relief. It's more like a brief teasing respite, like a man patting you on the back and saying, "You're doing great, kid," before he returns to the task of beating you to death. I'm actually not hopeless, though. America does not have a terminal illness. She has a treatable infection called communism. In fact, if we're going to get back on the right track in this country, I think that's the way that we should be thinking about this, like a doctor with a very sick patient in desperate need of intervention. And to extend or possibly abuse the metaphor, like doctors, we should look to the Hippocratic Oath, that solemn pledge that doctors used to make before it was rewritten to include diversity and equity. But the old Hippocratic Oath said this: I will apply for the benefit of the sick all measures that are required, avoiding those twin traps of overtreatment and therapeutic nihilism. Overtreatment, in the political sense, might be something like fascism, saying, do whatever it takes, just end this madness. Liberty is a small price to pay for a little bit of peace and quiet. The cure, remember, should never be worse than the sickness. But we are not here to talk about the vaccine. The other thing we're supposed to avoid is more insidious and, I think, more dangerous.
Therapeutic nihilism. Therapeutic nihilism is what we on the internet call the black pill. That is, it can actually feel good to be hopeless. It can feel good to surrender, to stop fighting. Hey, if you give up, you'll never be disappointed. You might even feel a sense of intellectual superiority. After all, those hopeful people, they're just naive. If they knew as much as you do, they'd be hopeless too. But no, you're not more enlightened just because you're despondent. Hopelessness is a self-fulfilling prophecy, but so is hope. And whenever I feel that abject negativity arise at the back of my mind, I have to remind myself that that's exactly what they want. And I hate them. And I refuse to give in to them out of sheer petulant stubbornness. But it can still be psychologically sickening to see headlines about the wars, the homelessness, the continuing existence of the Clintons. At times, I wish I could just ignore these things, live in blissful ignorance, but just because you don't think about something doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Whether you like it or not, Klaus Schwab is out there somewhere, probably eating babies. Bill Gates is wandering the earth, splicing cow DNA with cockroaches just to see what happens. George Soros is, as we speak, uploading his consciousness to some sort of supercomputer so he can bother us for eternity. The globalist transhuman psychotics are trying to take over, whether we like it or acknowledge it or not.
All right, folks, that is just a little taste. The full speech is there on band.video. Narrative war. Please watch and share now. Band.video. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Third hour of American Journal has begun. InfoWarsStore.com is the only place you can go to support us. We're not on a subscription platform. We are not beholden to any corporations or advertisers or anything of the sort. If we have been able to inform you, entertain you, educate or inspire you, if you have received any benefit from our daily, 10 hours of broadcast a day. But then you also have all of the band.video content creators, which is absolutely incredible. If any of that has been a benefit to you, all we ask is that you help contribute to this mission. As you can see, the powers that be recognize the Great Awakening is on and are doing everything they can to tamp it down. Stomp that fire out before it becomes a raging inferno. But we will continue to fan the flames. InfoWarsStore.com is where you go to support us. And we're having just massive victories across the board. Jaw-dropping stats, reports of Bud Light Memorial Day sales drop 60% as brand boycott continues. I need a different word for boycott. Like permanent boycott. That's what this is. It just needs to be a signal to corporations. This isn't something that you can, oh, sorry, oops, we didn't mean to, sorry. And then we're like, you're forgiven. We'll buy your product again. Just like Target, Bud Light, just they don't exist anymore in the minds of a lot of conservative Americans. It's not that they can change their ways and we'll be back. Just you were going to destroy your businesses now. We're going to destroy your companies. I mean, it's having massive effect. Because, and it's sort of the perfect example of that the will, the collective will of millions of people is obviously more powerful than just the ESG influences of a couple bankers in New York. Obviously, we can and should be weaponizing our collective influence through our purchasing, through our dollars, to send these people a message, and hopefully they're getting it. There's also
Harrison.
Yes, hello.
Real quickly, before we move on from this, I just have to ask you, who do you think would win, right? The biggest beer brand in the world or one tranny boy?
It's a good question. Babylon Bee had an article that was like, Dylan Mulvaney extorts companies by threatening to endorse their product. can you imagine?
It's crazy. And you know, the one of the bigger things, you know, a lot of people have been talking about how Bud Light's down and that means that Miller and other beer brands are up. And really, how big of a deal is that? Well, you know, Anheuser-Busch is the largest beer brand with a 2022 revenue of $58 billion. And the nearest competitor is at $38 billion. but they're making up some serious ground with just this one advertising campaign.
And it's great because, you know, it's not, you don't have to suffer. It's like, oh, you know, to send this political message, you know what you have to do?
To the biggest beer brand. To some, you know what I mean? That's huge. That makes a huge statement against woke culture, right? That's huge.
I mean, look at Target. Look, I mean, any of these companies, I mean, that's the thing. They think they have enough power that they can do whatever they want, and we just have to deal with it. And we're sending them a message that that's not the case. And so now, you know, we all have to do our part and buy good beer instead of bad beer. I know. This is the sacrifice we make. You're going to have to buy some sort of, you know, independent brewers, like really flavorful and delicious beer rather than the Bud Light canned swill. So that's what we're calling you to do, folks. It's the easiest thing in the entire world. We also have this story. This is just awesome news to see. Dash is the organization that's been going around Austin and capturing footage of the parks that are being destroyed by homeless camps. Jamie is the guy who runs it, and his footage of the so-called Violet Crown Trail has gone international in news. Daily Mail has a story all the way from Great Britain. Shocking video shows Texas Capitol's Crown Jewel hiking trail completely trashed by homeless camp. He, of course, made his first, Jamie, the guy who's behind this, the footage that's now gone super viral, national and international news, made his first public appearance with us here at American Journal and has gone on to do amazing things, and it's just kept at it. For a very long time, he was going around doing this activism, not getting a lot of attention, certainly not getting the attention he deserved, but it just shows that he stuck to it. He kept doing good work. He just kept plugging away, doing his part to bring awareness to the collapse of the city brought about by the liberal policies. And now finally it's come to fruition. So keep the faith, keep doing what you're doing. And we're actually going to hopefully have him back in studio to talk about this experience. He's going to be on Fox later today. He's going on with Waters and I think another hit on Fox. So what starts here changes the world, to steal the motto of the University of Texas. Yes, InfoWars has changed the world. We will continue to change the world. We will continue to rack up victories in the culture war as we slowly but surely, like a little tugboat pulling a gigantic Titanic steamer or cruise ship, we will change the course of this country towards a brighter and more hopeful future. With that, we go out to your phone calls. I want to go to Jay in Indiana. Jay in Indiana, line 10. Thank you so much for calling in. You are on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, collective will, the people of the country, you know, we're pretty close to having had enough. And there's a lot of good conservatives that we could put in office. What we need is a military to intervene with a general and somebody young like that Vivek guy there, Swami, whatever, or General Flynn to actually put together a militia, go into all of these state houses and courthouses and White Houses and tell these people they got to leave and bring in some real conservative-minded individuals and get on with governing the people as the people want to be governed. That I want to also give out a shout-out to that girl Shira in your customer service. She got back to me, and I appreciate that. I love your products. Your shirts have been coming in very handy because I run into people that you would never anticipate would you would speak with, and they see your shirts on your back, and you strike up a good conversation with good conservative-minded individuals, and that's a wonderful thing. And I love the job that you guys are doing, and got all your products, and I'm living life, but while I'm driving around in my truck here, going across all the states, I keep looking for that door that brings me back into the United States of America, because this country is crazy. And the reason we're not getting in touch with any of these aliens is they probably got a satellite on their spaceship and they're listening in on the news channels, and they say those people are crazy. And we're going to stay away from them because they're out of their mind.
Yeah, you couldn't blame them for thinking that. Yeah, speaking of aliens, I guess we should talk about it. Las Vegas police capture light falling from sky on dash cam before family claims 10-foot tall creatures seen in their backyard. Truly bizarre story out of Las Vegas, Nevada. Local police released body cam and dispatch audio of officers responding to a family saying they saw creatures in their backyard soon after the cops witnessed a light falling from the sky. So interesting. It's so fascinating and coincidental that all of these alien sightings happen in Nevada, which is 80% government land and home to the most top secret scientific experiments that the American government is carrying out. But no, I'm sure it's little green men from Mars. I don't believe it. Well, thank you for the call, Jay. I do want to try to get to one more call for the end of the segment. Thank you so much for that, though. Let's go to Daryl in North Carolina. You're talking about Bolsonaro, who seems to be under the same program that Donald Trump is being faced with. Daryl, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Hey, great stuff on Jack Smith, man. You are demasking a deep state freaking swamp creature right there. I'm just, my head's spinning. But yeah, Bolsonaro, you know, that's the Brazilian Trump. Last month, he got, basically the Brazilian feds are coming after him for, get this, falsifying COVID vaccination documents.
Yep. Yeah. Like, hey, they'll go after you for anything. I'm surprised they're not going after Trump for something like that. Go after Trump for not wearing his mask over his nose or something. They're desperate. We'll be joined in the next segment by Daniel Miller of the Texas Nationalist Movement. He's got some very exciting announcements about how you can get involved in the mission to secede from the Union, as our federal government has been completely taken over. We have no reason whatsoever to be loyal or even polite to these people anymore. But why are we still in a union with them? Why do I even have to concern myself with what a bunch of decrepit old corrupt scumbags in Washington, D.C. have to say about my life here in Texas? They do nothing for us. I mean, you want to talk about the social contract? It's been broken a million times. Things like the border. Like, all right, we're going to empower you with, you know, an exclusive monopoly on physical force. So, you got to protect us. You got to only use it to protect us. They're like, yeah, totally, sure. Anyway, we're opening the border and flooding your homes with millions upon millions of foreign citizens. And if you speak up against us, you're a racist and a terrorist, and we'll investigate you. So, contract absolved, right? Dissolved. Just totally unnecessary anymore for us to have any allegiance to this so-called union ever again. But, you know, we talk a lot about the LGBT religion. It is, of course, a godless religion. That doesn't mean it doesn't have all of the hallmarks of a religion, including the symbolism, the ideology, the pseudo-spirituality. So one way to think about the push, you know, people call woke these days, I'm frankly getting sick of that word, very, very sick of it, but regardless, it's has all of the characteristics of, say, a Inquisition. I don't think the Inquisition was this ruthless. I legitimately think that the current Rainbow Inquisition, way more far-reaching than the Spanish Inquisition ever was. I think you could still express doubts under the Spanish Inquisition. I think you could still say, you know, I'm a Catholic, but, you know, maybe this teaching is a little bit off. Like, you know, there's some wiggle room there. See, the way it works now is that if you are like associated with somebody who one time criticized a particular strategy of the LGBT cult, then you'll be removed or forced to denounce them. If you share a video of somebody, a Christian person, just explaining why Christians would want to boycott a company that's pushing the Antichrist pride agenda, then you'll be forced in a struggle session to go out and gravely apologize for ever holding religious beliefs contrary to the prevailing ideology in this country. It's pretty horrific. So the latest is a Call of Duty streamer in this group called FaZe Clan, I think it's called, at Amuse on Twitter has the story. Call of Duty removed Nick Merckx from game after he said that LGBTQ groups ought to leave kids alone. His stance against minor attracted people got him fired. So this was in response to somebody talking about the dueling protest that occurred in California, where there's an outbreak of some street violence, both sides sort of going at each other, fighting each other. Somebody comments saying, yeah, this happened 4 blocks from my Overwatch League apartment. Americans are in a sad place right now. Let people love who they love and live your own life. Nick Merckx responds, they should just leave little kids alone. That's the real issue. So for saying that the LGBT transgender cult should just leave kids alone, in other words, this sexual lifestyle should just not be messing with or bothering other people's children, he has been removed from his profession. He has been kicked off of the circuit. Call of Duty, the official video game platform, says, due to recent events, we have removed Nick Merckx operator bundle from the Modern Warfare 2 and Warzone store. We're focused on celebrating pride with our employees and our community. You have to be proud of us. You have to support us. You, how dare you disagree with us forcing our message on children? You're fired. Your merchandise is no longer available. You've been depersoned. I'm going to try to apologize. This is the Inquisition, after all. Pathetic, but real. With that, we go back out to your phone calls. James in Indiana this time. A couple callers from Indiana today. You want to talk about a national boycott of the DOJ? How would this work, James? I'm intrigued but confused. You're on the air.
Okay, I'm completely fed up with the corrupt Justice Department that targets innocent people like Trump while covering up the crimes of the government. The real story on Fox was how a federal prosecutor said in front of 5 people how he needs to get the witness to flip on Trump or he wouldn't get his judgeship. There are no fair trials in this country, and it's normal operating procedure for the DOJ to bring in witnesses to lie, manufacture fabricated evidence. I have one peaceful solution. Call for a national boycott of the DOJ and jury nullification across the nation because the crooks are doing the prosecuting.
Okay, what would that look like?
Basically, the American people would say we're sick and tired of the DOJ. Nothing they have can be believed. They're known criminals. And we're just going to start letting everybody walk in this country.
Interesting. I could see how this could coincide, fit rather neatly with the defund the police agenda. But this is, I guess this is a division, right? Like, conservatives are just like, we want patrols going around our neighborhoods, keeping us safe. The lefts are like, oh, they're all racist. They need to be disbanded because they're killing black people. It's totally untrue, just utterly false, ridiculous, and has left us incredibly unsafe as a result. Murder rates skyrocketing. Everybody knows this. Whereas we also, as conservatives, are like, maybe the federal government shouldn't be weaponized against people like Catholics and anti-abortion protesters and 87-year-old, you know, Holocaust survivors who don't want to get a needle in their arm full of a scientifically suspicious liquid. So I guess this division, and as we've said since the beginning of defund the police means privatizing police and federalizing the police. So I guess this is all in pattern. You think there's a way to combine this with the defund the police narrative, maybe capitalize on the anti-justice system sentiment that exists everywhere except when it applies to Trump and the January Sixers?
It's completely disgusting. It's two-tier. You know, you got Hillary Clinton smashing up and destroying evidence after a court order, which is illegal as heck. They let her go. But hey, let's make up stuff on Trump. Like I said last night, that was on Fox with the prosecutors saying, hey, we need to flip this witness or I'm not going to get my judgeship. All these cases in America are rigged. There are no fair federal cases in America.
Mm. Boycott of the DOJ. Very, very interesting idea. I don't think we're going to have time to go to any other calls today because we'll be joined in the next segment by Daniel Miller, president of the Texas Nationalist Movement. Very excited to talk to him about a possible solution to all of this. I think that's what we need right now, even if, I mean, people want to roll their eyes. I mean, yeah, if you aren't going to try to do something, then it's not going to happen. If you're going to think that you can't do something, then you're right. If you think you can do something, you're also right. All of this is self-fulfilling prophecy in part. And that's actually sort of the theme of the speech that I gave, which again you can find on band.video, called Narrative War. So this is why I like having somebody like Daniel Miller on. It's like, here's something that we could actually do, and it could actually be like the sword through the Gordian knot, as it were. Very excited to talk to him on the other side. Stay with us, folks. All right, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the American Journal, broadcasting live from deep in the heart of Texas. I'm Harrison Smith, your host. Very happy to welcome my guest, Daniel Miller. He is president of the Texas Nationalist Movement and author of the book, Texit, Why and How Texas Will Leave the Union, a featured guest on Fox News, CNN, CNBC, BBC News, RTTV, and so many other outlets. Mr. Miller has been a vocal proponent of a fundamental reexamination of the relationship between all states and the federal, or in the federal union, I should say. The website is tnm.me. Daniel can be found on Twitter at the Texian DM, and he's got a new podcast I'm excited to tell you about as well. A lot of new developments in the Texas nationalist movement recently, haven't there been, Mr. Miller?
Oh yeah, I mean it's look, the hits keep coming, right? I mean this is what you have to do if you want to see independence happen. I mean you just have to keep swinging and keep building and keep moving. So. We're busy, just to say the least.
You're extremely busy. I've been noticing on Twitter, I originally wanted to have you on because you've got this petition that I want you to tell people out. And then like in between, you know, that and now you've launched a podcast. You're like really up in your game in terms of social media, really dominating places like TikTok. Like you're coming out with all these great videos that just explain this concept of Texas secession to people in a way that it can be easily spread and understood. So I guess first and foremost, the petition. Tell us about the petition.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So some people may not know, Texas is not a true initiative and referendum state like many other states, right? Citizens don't have a mechanism to, say, bypass a legislature that is as intransigent and lazy as ours can be at times, right? So however, there is a very narrow exception to that in the Texas Election Code 172.088. It allows voters by petition to place a question on a party's primary ballot. And so this is something that we have attempted a couple of times before. However, the Texas Election Code makes it really, really difficult. I mean, it's very draconian. I mean, it's one of the reasons it's the same sort of process that you would use to get an independent candidate on a statewide ballot. So anyone who's ever looked at that knows how difficult that is. And they set the bar that high because the Uniparty wants to stay in power. But what we've done is, since the last two times that we've made this attempt, is we have found a way to collect the signatures electronically and make them fully compliant with the Texas Election Code. So this represents not only a game changer for our petition, but we believe a game changer for politics here in Texas moving forward in the future, allowing much better access to the ballot for potentially candidates or political parties or whatever. So, the petition campaign is going to be exciting because we crossed that threshold, and it's a little over 97,000 signatures for the Republican Party, about 53,000 for the Democratic Party. We crossed that threshold, and then Texans get to go into the polling place in March during the primaries and answer the question, should the state of Texas reassert its status as an independent nation?
And I mean, what a great way to move this discussion forward and sort of force the issue on people who would rather just ignore that there's a giant movement of people that have no interest in being allied in any way to the scumbags in Washington. I mean, I think it's brilliant. Explain, if you will, the division, the Republican and Democrat version of this, because if you want to sign the petition, you go to tnm.me/petition. And on that, you can see where you can sign the petition. And there's three options. There's Republican, Democratic, and other. So why is the petition divided into these three categories?
Well, because each party holds their own primary, right? So the way that the code reads, you have to deal with each party separately. So the Republican Party will have a petition, the Democratic Party will have a petition, and then the mechanism doesn't exist for parties that don't nominate by petition, right? So if they, you know, like the Libertarian Party nominates by convention. So, the good thing about the Libertarian Party is we already have a plank on the platform the Libertarian Party calling for a vote on this issue. But ultimately for us, you know, this is a way to be able to put this on a ballot for people to go into the polling place and have their voices heard on this issue, either for or against. And it can't be overstated the importance of being able to put this to a vote of the people, especially, you know, when you look at it in the context of what's happening in Texas politics here, how disgruntled everyone is with the legislature, and understanding that we intend to flood the zone with pro-Texas candidates in the primaries. And so you're looking at a situation where the average independence referendum around the world has about an 85% voter turnout. That's not what this will be, but turnout with this on the ballot will be substantially higher. Then you have you know, a flood of pro-Texas candidates. So people like us have an opportunity to go into the polls and not only vote for Texas, but vote for politicians or vote for folks that will absolutely carry out their will when that comes back in the affirmative. So this entire campaign has the potential to really change politics here in Texas for quite some time and propel us toward independence.
It seems like such an obvious solution, and I like that there's a Republican, you know, independent and Democratic version of this petition, just even to reemphasize that, like, you don't have to be a Republican to want Texas to be independent of Washington, D.C., as we've been talking about the Trump indictment or the invasion at the southern border. Everybody's getting fed up with the federal government at this point. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. If you got a brain in your head, you can recognize just how corrupt Washington has become, just how wasteful they are with your money. They don't do what they're supposed to do, but demand you do as they say. I mean, everybody's sick of this. So you don't even have to agree with us politically to agree with us on the topic of Texas, and that Texas could handle its own affairs far better and with far more care for the people of Texas than the U.S. government will ever have.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that was, has been the, I think, the thing that has been surprising about third party polling on this issue going all the way back to 2009. Is the real broad swath of you know, sort of voter identities that support the idea of Texas becoming a self-governing independent nation. Now, granted, it's always going to skew and always has skewed higher Republican than Democrat. But, you know, you look at that Survey USA poll from last summer, and you saw 76% of Republicans, 54% of Democrats, and 52% of independent voters, right? I mean, those are stunning numbers because they don't match any other issue. You're not going to find that sort of agreement across any other issue. And at the heart of it is the people of Texas are sick and tired of being governed by 2.5 million unelected federal bureaucrats.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's really, you know, as you always point towards, like, you know, if we weren't in the union, what are the arguments that would be in favor of joining it? There are none, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, some of these problems that seem so intractable between Republicans and Democrats, they only exist because of the media manipulation and the behavior of the federal government. And really, if you just sit down to human beings to talk about this thing, we can come to an understanding. We can come to some sort of compromise or just something that can work for both of us. But as soon as that percolates up to Washington, D.C., suddenly we're at each other's throats and tearing each other's hair out. And I'm sick of it. I think a lot of people are sick of it. I want to talk to you about
why you got to bring hair into it. Why you got to bring hair into it, man?
You're immune. You're immune to the hair pulling from the left right now. But they'll still kick you in the shin. Don't worry. No, I want to talk to you about all sorts of stuff. We're going to continue on the other side with Daniel Miller. I want to talk about what's going on in the Texas legislature since the impeachment of Ken Paxton was a big deal that, again, people on both sides of the aisle are sort of baffled at what's going on here as we see the uniparty assert its dominance over the people of Texas. But if you want to sign the petition, you again go to tnm.me/petition. You can sign it if you're Democrat, if you're Republican. If you just want a smaller government that can actually deal with issues rather than starting wars across the world for no particular reason and spending your money on stuff you don't believe in, go there and sign the petition, and we can actually make a difference. Daniel Miller is my guest on Twitter at @TheTexianDM. You've got a new podcast as well called Texas News. We'll talk about that and so much more on the other side. Stay with us for our final segment of American Journal, InfoWars.com. There you go, Texan Journal. I like it. I like it. But then I'll be competing with my guest. And that won't be good. There is sort of a Texan Journal. It's a new podcast called Texas News with Daniel Miller. Daniel Miller is my guest, president of the Texas Nationalist Movement. TNM.me is the website. He's on Twitter at the Texian DM. And Texas Nationalist Movement is on Twitter there as well. And you can find the petition to sign that can hopefully get Texas secession on the ballot next year. Daniel Miller, again, thank you so much for coming on. And tell us about the new podcast that you have. This is another thing. I wanted to have you on about the petition. I thought that was the big thing. And then you're announcing podcasts. I mean, you guys are really making a lot of moves over at the Texas Nationalist Movement. Tell us about the new podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast, I mean, to drop it right here amongst the petition campaign, the county commissioner's court campaigns, I mean, all these other things. It's kind of like, hey, where did this come from? But it's something that we've been discussing for quite some time. But we've launched a new podcast called the Texas News Podcast, and it's hosted by me and the TNM. And essentially what we're going to do is we're going to take the news of the day or the bigger issues of the day and examine them through a Texas perspective. So, you know, it's one thing to kind of regurgitate like the media does normally. I mean, you guys know this because I've seen you and heard you rail against how the media does this, but they take an issue and they regurgitate it. They just kind of sing out of the entire party line. And there are very few outlets that examine these through the perspective of Texas and, you know, how this plays into Texas independence or Texas nationalism or just, you know, the benefit of Texas overall. And so it's going to give a good opportunity for me to spell out, you know, 20 plus years of self-determination knowledge and throw it into the mix with this Texas news. And so we launched off, obviously, our first episode dropped this week where we talked about the launch of the Texas petition campaign. But we're going to be covering a lot of issues. We're going to be covering the special session, the probably special sessions, plural, here in Texas. We're going to talk about the impeachment of Ken Paxton. We're going to talk about the lawsuit against State Representative Jeff Leach for accusing Texas supporters of treason. I mean, we've got a lot on the horizon. So very excited to be doing this.
So it's called the Texas News with Daniel Miller, or the Texas News Podcast. Where can people find that podcast?
Yeah, we're gonna be everywhere you can find the podcast. Obviously, the Apple Podcast, Spotify. You can see the link there on the screen. You know, we're really pushing the Spotify link, but you'll be able to find it, and we'll have a link on the TNM site by the end of the week.
Well, again, very very exciting stuff, and it seems like every time I have you on, there's some new pursuit you guys are going on, whether it's making little short videos to explain the idea of Texas secession to people, which it seems so self-evident to me. It seems so obvious. There's so much of the stuff we have to rail against from the central government. And meanwhile, right, Texas is geographically like bigger than France. Population wise, it's up there with some of the biggest countries in the world. Our economy is like as big as Russia's. And the idea that, you know, we're just one part of the United States, you don't need to focus on Texas. I mean, it's absurd. There's more news here than there is in entire countries around the world. It deserves our focus, I think.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Look, I mean, our executive team since January the 1st of this year have traveled by car because we don't fly anywhere here in Texas, but we've traveled the equivalent of the distance around the equator of the earth. I mean, that's how many miles we've driven as executive team to go out there and take this message. It's a big place, and there's a lot to cover here. If this were any other place in the world, we would have our own 24/7 news network. Right. You know, we would have our own sports channel. We would have our own sports leagues. I mean, we would have all these things, right? And that's the thing about it. You know, it really is a testament to the fact that Texas is really in and of itself a nation. So, you know, it deserves that kind of coverage. It deserves that sort of focus, and it deserves a new voice, a new perspective on all things that are going on from that Texas perspective. And that's what we're hoping to do with the podcast. But look, Harrison, that's why we launch these campaigns and we run them and we push them through. Like, you know, we talked about the petition campaign, but A lot of people don't realize that back in October of last year, Edwards County, Texas passed a resolution calling on the legislature to put Texas to a vote of the people. And we're carrying on that campaign. It's almost close to passage in another county. It has the full support of all the county commissioners. The county judge is kind of the stumbling block here. But, you know, we're pushing that program out to all 254 counties. We're looking for 254 resolutions calling for the legislature to put Texas on the ballot. And, you know, and that's just one of many things that we're doing to advance this issue, because at the end of the day, the people of Texas deserve a vote on this. And when the people of Texas are asked the question, they are going to say that Texas would be better off as an independent nation and ultimately should be.
Wouldn't we even be in a better off, like, on the international stage? Because I just think about, a story here from the cradle: U.S. Army reinforces presence in occupied Syrian oil fields. It's like, what does that have to do with me? Why are we in Syria at all? And you look at just the way that now China is making big inroads in the Middle East, because the American government, the federal government in Washington, D.C., has ruined our reputation abroad as Americans. Like, nobody likes us anymore for pretty good reason. They have personal experience with the U.S. federal government, and, you know, their villages get bombed and their oil gets stolen, and we don't see the benefit from it, but we certainly get the blame of it, because at the end of the day, we are Americans and they're our government, and we're in a way responsible for it. So I almost just want to separate myself from America. So if I go overseas, I can go, whoa, I'm not with those guys. I'm not with the warmonger, Ukraine war, Middle East destroyers. I'm from Texas, and we don't want anything to do with that. We want our own thing. We want everybody to live together peacefully. I mean, is that an aspect of the Texas secession movement as well, the international stage?
Well, Texans are always have always been viewed a little bit differently overseas, right? But I'll tell you, and I think this is really the issue here. That's one of the issues that's fueling support for Texas. You know, you just shared this article about the military bolstering the defenses of occupied Syrian oil fields. Texans are having a very difficult time reconciling news like that with the fact that you've got the chief of the Border Patrol Union coming out and saying that the cartels are in operational control of the Rio Grande River and the border. They're having a difficult time seeing billions of dollars going overseas to fund war efforts for other places or border security for other places. But yet our border is more porous than any other border that you could possibly imagine. So, you know, you look at those issues where you have billions of dollars of aid. And I can remember a few years ago when the United States was giving India massive amounts of foreign aid. They have a space program, right? If you have a space program, you don't need foreign aid at all, right? Here we've got, because of ridiculous monetary policy and fiscal policy and taxation policy, we've got more and more Texans that are slipping underwater below that poverty line, that are having a harder time putting food on the table, keeping their children fed, right? Or putting gas in their car so they can get to work. And people are sick and tired of looking at, all of these situations that they're going through because of the brokenness of the federal government or its intent. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of this they're doing on purpose.
Right.
They're sick and tired of looking at that while the federal government just kind of goes and does whatever it wants to and is perfectly fine improving the standard of living for people everywhere but here.
Right. I mean, it's such a strange situation we're in where it seems like the people that the American government care about least are the American citizens. They roll out the red carpet for everybody else. But man, if you're in Ohio and a train explodes in your backyards, you're out of luck because the American government's not going to help you. You're just an American citizen. So if I was running for president, my motto would be like, make citizenship mean something again. Because that's the other thing. The Texas nationalist movement, it supersedes all the other divisions. It's all these fabricated divisions, white and black, Jewish, Christian. It's like, well, but aren't you a Texan? Aren't we countrymen together. So don't we have mutual interests that we both are striving for, and all that other stuff can, it can still be there. We can still, you know, be independent people and respect our individual sovereignty. But at the end of the day, we need something that unifies us or we're just going to collapse. I just love it. I love what you're doing. I wish we had more time. You'll have to come back, or I guess I'll have to listen to Texas News with Daniel Miller. That's a new podcast. You can find Daniel on Twitter at the Texian DM, and the website is tnm.me, and you can go to tnm.me/petition to sign the petition and actually get a vote for Texit on the ballot next year. Thank you so much for coming on, Mr. Miller.
Hey, anytime, amigo. Let's do this again soon.
Absolutely, we will. And keep up the great work. To everybody else, stay tuned. The Alex Jones Show begins in about 90 seconds. Have a good weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.